Stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth.
I truly believe that thoughts are the greatest vehicle to change.
We do not care whether the cat is black or white, as long as it can catch mice.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Victory in spite of all terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be.
To those waiting with bated breath for that favorite media catchphrase, the U-turn, I have only one thing to say. U-turn if you want to. The ladies, not for turning.
The customer is never wrong is a quote from Swiss hotelier Cesar Ritz, the founder of the Hotel Ritz, a name synonymous to the highest standards of service in the world. I thought this was an appropriate quote for our guest today, the leader of one of Australia's largest hospitality groups. Our guest today is Dan Brady, Chief Executive Officer of Redcape Hotel Group and Moelis Australia Hotel Management. The group owns and operates hotels, pubs and other venues valued in excess of $1.1 billion, striving to deliver excellent community-specific services across Australia. From his early days in regional New South Wales to owning and operating a renowned hotel on the state's south coast, and now at the helm of an ASX-listed hospitality leader, Dan takes us on a journey through his distinguished career. Widely regarded in the industry, Dan is also a director of the Liquor Stacks Retail Group, was previously CEO of National Leisure and Gaming Limited, and is an active member of the Australian Hotels Association. Hello and welcome to another episode of No Limitations, a show where we speak to elite world-class performing men and women and unlock the secrets and influences that have shaped their destinies and that you could apply to your own life. For our first-time listeners from all over the world, please don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. And for our listeners in Germany, Canada, and New Zealand, a big hello. I am your host, Greg Robinson, Managing Partner of Blenheim Partners, Executive Search and Board Advisory. In today's episode, Dan shares with us what being a leader means to him, how he is navigating the roller coaster of the global pandemic, and how Redcape, as an organization, through the use of AI and technology, has enabled a new frontier, transforming itself into a communications company as they continue to engage with their customers and the greater public. With their finger on the pulse of real Australia, we hear stories of how communities are coping and adapting to the challenges in front of them. And we also hear what we can be looking forward to when the doors of our much-loved venues open up once again. Finally, to finish on a light note, Dan, the consummate publican, gives us advice on how to pour the perfect beer. So sit back and enjoy the pub test. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Greg. Great to be here.
I was a bit worried about catching up with you, Dan. No snakes around. I've seen some of your antics with snakes in the past, and I wanted to know if there's any snakes in the studios here today. Can you sort of fill the audience in about your antics with those snakes?
Oh, look, I did a challenge a little while ago of jumping into a tank of snakes and lying there. It was all for a good cause, but it was a very terrifying experience for me. It was, one of those Indiana Jones moments, I think.
You had affinity to snakes, or you've been growing up scared of snakes and this was the big bold plunge of all time?
Oh, look, coming from Tamworth, there was always a snake or two outside the front door, but we had a good red kelpie that kept the snakes away. So I was protected there, but no, I don't like snakes. So it was quite a challenge to jump into a tank with hundreds of them.
Ooh, well, crawling, and while they're crawling all over the body, were they?
It was there was one big one, and that was and some small ones, but the big one was the one that really terrified me.
What was it in aid of, Dan? What was the cause?
It was the Dare to Cure, the Cancer Foundation. And look, you know, it was terrific. It was a lot of support from industry and really people over my entire career, from, you know, back in the early days right through all of the different groups of people that I've been able to brush with over the time. It's fantastic.
And did you raise some good amount of money?
Yeah, look, we did well. We raised a fairly substantial amount of money that year, and it was, again, all for a good cause. And it's that particular CEO Dare event is something that, has grown and grown over the years, which is just terrific.
Yeah, look, the reason I brought it up, I guess, in the sort of state of affairs that many Australians are experiencing here in different parts of the world, community's vital, isn't it? And I guess giving an understanding of the community is so key in where we're going. And I guess as a leader, that's something you're very mindful of.
Yeah, look, being blessed having worked in a pub environment, I guess we talked very contemporarily today about a circular economy. Mm-hmm. And we had examples of that happening in different businesses on a product base. This is something that pubs have done for a lot of years. You've got, a lot of leaders, mayors, different people come out of the pub environment who end up being the community leaders. And these places give so much in terms of leadership and then receive so much from the community. And it's about that symbiotic relationship that keeps building and building, which is that, really at the essence of where a lot of the cutting edge sort of strategies are around how you create a circular economy. And we've got one here that's probably been going for 100 years or more. And that's something that we think about a lot in the business.
Maybe take us back a little bit, Dan, from the beginnings. You grew up in the bush. You grew up in Tamworth. Circular economy, what was it like out there in those days? And what inspired you to take the career path that you have?
Well, I think I was, really fortunate back in those days to be in a hospitality business where you got to learn the public bar and what happens in a public bar, just about everything. So you've got to really understand people. You've got to understand your staff, your customers, but you get to understand them in a very deep way and you learn to put yourself in their shoes. And today you hear a lot of business techs talk about empathy.
Yep.
That's really learning it from the grassroots up. And, I guess from the added bonus of learning a trade and an apprenticeship and empathy back from those days was also the fact that I had a business owner who taught me tea accounting and ledger accounting and those sorts of things of running the back end of the business at a 18-year-old sort of level. And that set me up really for a lifelong journey of learning, having then gone to a university and business schools and different things like that to build out really what is a lifelong learning journey.
What do you like so much about the leisure industry then?
Certainly, there's a couple of aspects to it. One is it's a humanistic business. It's a people business. So it's understanding people. And again, if you come from that grassroots level of learning people from ground up, it does allow you to get into some very wonderfully enhancing experiences. You learn how to build trust with people. That's a cornerstone of what we do in our business. And it also, given the timing of my entry into this business, so these were really, cottage businesses back in the day that have become very big business today. And what that has allowed for is an understanding on how you really can, in what are micro businesses into a big business, test and learn lots of business concepts, really understand how to be innovative and drive at the leading edge of opportunities across what a lot of big businesses, try and do, but you can test and learn in that small environment.
Well, I sort of read a little bit about your history, and I guess you're not giving advice from the sideline. You didn't you at one stage during your career own and run the Marlin Hotel down in Ulla Dulla?
Yeah, look, lots of different ownership structures over the years. That was a pub that I owned at the time, and really at that point in time, we were successful down there, and I decided that I wanted to understand how to run this in a big business context. So that's led me to having all sorts of corporate structures that I've dealt with over the years. Running pub platforms for high net worth. We've got 40 pubs today, but we've been as many as 100 pubs, listed, unlisted, hedge fund, private equity, and all the various different structures that I've worked in and worked for those stakeholders. And really, you've got shareholders and what their returns profile is, the nature of their capital, how it comes into these different structures, and really then understanding where your strategy need to lay for success and performance.
Well, maybe, Dan, could you talk through, for the benefit of the audience, the sophistication of the industry that you're in? And as you said, those stepping stones and the exposure that you've had, but maybe bring to the audience, the day-to-day role that you have.
Yeah, well, what was a cottage industry a number of years ago is really now a big business. And we've just seen Endeavour list on the boards, and that's a big business. And fundamentally, it's a pub business. These businesses are made up of, many small pubs, small businesses, but, the basic level of a pub a few years ago might have been $2 or $3 million. And today, one pub can be worth up to $100 million.
Yeah, right, okay.
So it's quite substantial in terms of value accretion over the years. And really, from a corporate structuring standpoint, listed environment, you've got all the governance rules as you would expect.
Yes.
However, from a how you wedge a competitive advantage in this business is really in and around how you think about your staff, think about your customers, think about performance. And that's really where the sophistication lay today, is in leading large teams and leading them on a values platform of having one set of values, a set of behaviours, and really understanding your performance metrics and driving at those performances. We've got a digital platform and we innovate in that the whole time, which, really drives out fantastic outcomes.
Dan, you mind sort of sharing a little bit more about the essence of what you just said about the values? Like, what are they? And why would I respond if I was working with you and your team?
Yeah, so look, we have a pretty clear guide to what leadership looks like in our company. We've got a promise. We build trust. We build trust that energizes and values people. So I have a pretty clear test on that. Every time I leave a meeting, I say to myself, or an encounter or a decision, have I built trust? Have I treaded water on trust, or have I deteriorated trust? What have I done?
Okay.
And, obviously the latter two is unacceptable, and it's only going for building trust. And that's really, the purpose of every decision, every encounter, every sort of thing that we do within the organization. How does that live out? We have our care, courage, and collaboration values, which are nouns. What's the doing under that? We have our behaviours, and that's how we hold ourselves accountable as a team and to each other. And we have performance metrics on that. And we have three performance metrics, two lead indicators, one lag indicator. The lead indicators sit around having highly engaged staff and then having customers that are advocates. And having, so you customer NPS scores and staff satisfaction score. And then the lag is our distributable earnings or profit number. So really, when we sit around in our business, we're not thumping the desk and going, hey, what about the profit? What about the P&L and what have you? We're sitting there saying, have we built trust? What's our staff satisfaction rating? We can do something about that. That is a lead indicator. We can drive that. Are our customers advocates for us? And listen to them, have the conversation with them, and drive higher performance. If we do those two things, then we'll deliver enhanced profit. And that's our value chain.
So, Dan, what is the scale of the organisation?
Look, Redcake today is a bit over $1 billion in value.
Wow, okay.
And then we have unlisted funds as well. So I'm the CEO and Managing Director of listed Redcake, but I'm also the CEO of MAHM, which is an investment-grade hospitality manager that manages other funds as well. So that added to, we're heading towards $2 billion.
And the growth, where do you see the growth coming from, Dan?
Well, we've been growing for a lot of years now. Our strategy sits in being a sustainable growth company. There's been different cycles that we've been through, Started as a startup many years ago, and we've been in accelerated growth at certain times, and today we find ourselves in sustainable growth, which is a strategy very much centered around, can we add value to assets? We can do that through growing the earnings, which is what we've been doing for a number of years. So it's our existing assets and being able to add value to our existing assets, as well as acquisition. We take a very disciplined and measured approach to acquisition. And it's not just adding more to the pile. It's can we add value and can we deliver an enhanced total shareholder return?
Community, again, I think we started from, but maybe that's central to the role of Redcape and how you engage and the trust you build with the customer.
Yeah, well, again, you know, that purpose of building a trusted environment is, again, applicable to not just our staff, it's applicable to our customers and indeed to our investors. From a community standpoint, one of the things that, you know, we firmly believe in is the idea that the hotel should be a leader of the community.
Mm-hmm.
This sits very well in the current environment, which is all about localism. It's all about community. It's about helping each other, which is, you know, what we know of the current environment. And this is just the DNA of hotels. And one of the things we've been able to do over recent times is create a digital platform that has a continuous sort of feedback loop running through it and how it builds further value into the community. And we've been able to, all transactions that are embarked upon by our customers, attract pledge points that they then nominate where funds go. So it's community driven from the customer. We don't get involved. All we're doing is putting the platform there. And that'll equate to this year of around $1 million going out to around 300 community groups as nominated and driven by the customer.
Right.
So it's a real win-win for the organisation and the customer. It's customer-centric in terms of them driving it. And it feeds exactly into the thematic of what these hotels have been for over 100 years or more.
And as a CEO during these sort of, I guess, challenging times, how are you finding things mentally, physically? How are you communicating your message? Obviously, you've had to change that somewhat. Maybe you could sort of share, how do you lead through this sort of period of ambiguity?
Well, I think, you know, the first lockdown, we flipped into calling ourselves a communications company. And that's what we've done again now. So what do you have to think about in a communications company? You have to think about connection. And what we also take a core to performance and having a performance-based culture is, as environment changes, are your performance metrics appropriate? And through this period, we go away from staff engagement, we go to staff connection rates. We go away from customer NPS scores because customers aren't walking through the door at all.
Yeah.
We go to communication open rates, EDM open rates on the digital platform, those sorts of things. Are our communications good enough? Are they capturing the mood? Like, the mood changes, you know, as we speak, is very much about feeling trapped, discontent, feelings of frustration. How do we identify with that with our customers and turn that into a positive, proactive, constructive conversation? And, you know, for example, right now we've gone out to our customers and said, hey, remember when we weren't in lockdown, you were coming?
Yes.
You're feeling frustrated now. What were you frustrated about back then? Tell us. Let's do something about it together. And whilst we're in this shutdown phase, we can surprise and delight you when we open and do something about that. So it's about, you know, having those meaningful conversations with our customers. So right now the business is, you know, very stable. In any of these situations, what do you think about? You think about not running out of cash, being very liquid, having your assets secure, having your people connected, having your customers engaged and communicated with. And then with everything stable and calm and deliberate, you then start to say, well, how do we accelerate out of this by learning, growing and developing, which is exactly what we're doing right now. So it's a very positive mood at the moment. And it's a positive mood of laying down the bricks and foundations on when we open and how do we accelerate and continue our sustainable growth journey.
So how have you changed your style during this period as a leader? I understand all that part, but what about the day-to-day to your own team? How, have you changed at all? Have you communicated differently?
My style hasn't changed.
Okay.
You know, like our long-term strategy doesn't change. You know, it's the same strategy. We might do a few things in between a little bit different because we find circumstances have changed a little, but it's the same long-term strategy. My style's the same. We would do things, of course, a little bit different when you call yourself a communications company rather than a hospitality company.
Yes.
Which is to say that the amount of time that, you know, we spend communicating with each other in not just formal development meetings, growth meetings, those sorts of things, we put a higher priority on ensuring people's mental health and, you know, how are you questions become a much more important question. Perhaps they should always be that important, but they seem to have more resonance at the moment, and ensuring we're carving out a lot of time for that is a big priority.
Dan, what are you hearing from the community?
Oh, I think that there's some of those emotions and feelings that I just laid out, trapped, discontent, frustrated, are really ringing quite loud at the moment. And, you know, it is what it is. However, I think that what we're certainly doing as a business is trying to pick those emotions up, not trying to dismiss them because they're real, and then turn them into a positive and constructive conversation that can have positive outcome. That's what we're trying to do as a business. But I think that they are the emotions at the moment, but they change quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of our framework of engaging with customers is to make sure that we're very agile around understanding where the mood's changing. And we can do that because we've got, 200,000 digital customers that we can talk to and have conversations with and understand that mood.
Dan, you've got a reputation for having the innovator's mindset, being creative, maybe taking the odd risk. Where's that come from and where's it taking you to?
That is a great question. I think the thing for me is that in my brand today, my personal leadership brand, I have creativity as a pillar. And I played music all my life. I write music. I play lots of different instruments, that sort of stuff. And then when I got to accounting, I stopped doing that stuff and became a bit more robotic and a bit more disciplined around how I should think. And for many years, I actually didn't think about creativity and really focused on more discipline, more, I guess, understanding of things like corporate Australia and those sorts of things. And really what's been unearthed, I think, in myself as a person over the last, it was probably creeping on a decade ago, but certainly over the last 5 or 7 years, has been tapping right back into my creativity. And what is creativity? Mm. Creativity is, there's a real discipline on creativity within itself, but it's also having a curious mindset and ensuring that with that curiosity comes a real preoccupation with understanding a problem more before getting to a solution.
Yep.
So certainly internally in the business, we collaborate a lot around problems. And is that the problem we're trying to solve? Hang on, let's test that. Is that the problem we're trying to solve? No, it's not actually. Let's think about it. No, we're trying to actually solve something else and keep going until you get to that refined problem. And from there, you know, solutions tend to spill out pretty quickly, and then you can apply the creativity on top of that. And, you know, that really, really gets me excited. And I know the teams around me get very excited when we go down those paths. I mean, one of the things we have on our platform is we do have a creativity room. And, you know, you go into that room and you just drop all the barriers and still approach it in a disciplined fashion, but it's a fashion that really centres a lot on refining a problem and then gets to walls down barriers on how you might solve that problem.
I reckon you've hit the nail on the head there, Dan, but the question I'm trying to think about is why did you let it subside for 10 years?
I think that, you know, getting into, I mean, it was a time where I got, we're around a lot of, you know, private equity, hedge funds, there was a listed space back then, various boards that I sat on and reported into. And I was learning. I was learning a lot about governance. I was learning a lot about the legal system. I was learning, in lots of different spheres.
Yep.
And I'm not saying I was sort of overtly passionate about any of that, but it was learning. I was very focused on it. And I think everyone can't do everything, right? You've got to immerse yourself in things if you're going to learn them. And that's what I was doing. And that didn't really allow for, I guess, the creativity to flow.
I was just thinking the bigger picture is just have we lost the weighting on creativity?
I think there's a translation that's required for it, i.e. that if you don't, and I go back to the fundamentals, if you don't have the toys in the cot, you can't play with them. If you haven't got a good balance sheet, if you haven't got the fundamentals of your governance right, if you haven't got the right sort of engagement with your shareholders, if you haven't, all these sorts of things, then, you can have all sorts of dreams, but you won't realise them to come true because you don't get the opportunity to think like that. But thinking like that has got to come from a basis of having your core business and your fundamentals right. That's where we're at today. We've been there for a little while, and that does allow for creativity to come in, innovation to come in. And I guess for a business like ours, which has micro businesses within it, your ability to test and learn stuff is huge. So we can go off and do, not very expensive testing of, the latest business thinking out of MIT or something like that and see if it works, then use it or lose it.
So when you go through interviews now and you bring those future stars through, are you testing them on their creativity?
It's a very much a values test. There is a rare talent out there at the moment, which is customer-centric thinking. Truly customer-centric thinking. Very few people have got it. And, if we test that and find that, that's a eureka moment. And then it's all laden on values. What's the essence of the person? Are they, no one's a good or bad person. It's just whether or not you're aligned.
Yeah.
So are you aligned to what we're doing here, aligned to who we are? Can you challenge and be additive to what we're doing? Bringing people in with a challenge mindset is also one of those other eureka moments if we can find it in the talent pool out there.
So what actually is customer-centric thinking then from your lens?
I think it's your ability to put your feet in the customer's shoes and not care that, you might engineer anything from a business process, a workflow process, a financial system, whatever, all of it. How does it enhance the customer?
Yep.
Even though it might be 1,000 miles away, how does it enhance the customer? Because if the whole organization's aligned that way, then it is going to enhance the customer. And I think that what I find regularly, and I think this is, this comes out of a top-down mindset out of, the corporate sphere forever.
Yeah.
Is that, we go and engineer new ways to do things with a, we're talking customer, we're thinking customer, but it's sort of convenient for us staff to do all the workforce to do it this way. Mm. So we'll do it that way. And we're only compromising on this 5 or 10% to make it easier for ourselves.
Yes.
But it's not customer centric. And so I think that's really the discipline. And as acute as I think about these things myself,
yep.
I find them all the time in our business, all the time, and they're hidden. And, it's about having that challenge mindset around the table that can ask the question, how is this really adding to our customer's value set?
Can I ask you a customer-centric question then?
Yep.
Why do I have to go to the bar rather than the bar come to me this day and age?
There you go.
Just drives me up the wall. You want my money, and I've got to go over there and watch you pull that beer. And my mate, you didn't do it as well as I liked, or whatever the case is going to be. Why didn't you come to my table and look after me? I'm sitting here paying you.
Watch this space.
What's taken so long?
I think there is a balance between, and this is horses for courses, but I think your point is an excellent one. And I think that is exactly where all this will go, you know, and more. So you won't get me making an argument against that point because I totally agree with it.
I think some people described you, Dan, haven't they, as the one of the ultimate, or if not the ultimate, when it comes to displaying the art of the publican. I guess it's a kind of black art, Dan, and requires a lot of intuition. But when it comes to the engagement, running the business and performance, can you sort of enlighten us on what is the art of the publican?
Oh, I think the art of the publican sits right in the public bar. It's inherent in the name. If you can throw yourself into a public bar, don't know anyone, in the middle of Redfern, in suburbs of Brisbane, in the suburbs of Melbourne, and go up to anyone and sit down there and have a chat and have a meaningful chat with someone where you get something out of it, they get something out of it. You are a publican who has an understanding of people. You have that empathy. And we hear empathy a lot, right? We hear it a lot in terms in our business context of how do you become a customer-centric business. And, you know, the essence of a customer-centric business is empathy, your ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And, you know, I think that's a really big challenge in business. I think that certainly in our business, there's small numbers of people that are truly customer-centric, that can truly put themselves in that mindset and then come up with innovations and growth initiatives that center in around the customer. I think a lot of the time, whether it be in this business or any other business, you know, we're so used to engineering outcomes that are convenient for us in the business, working in the business, or you know, for other stakeholders, rather than actually driving at what's centric to the customer. So, you know, for me, I think that has been honed by many years of that public bar where you can really talk to any walk of life of person and have an enriching experience out of that.
Are we relying too much on technology then to understand our customer, or has it been a terrific enabler from your perspective?
I think it's a terrific enabler. You know, the technology is very functional, and I think everyone jumps into a very functional mindset with it. And, you know, the logic in it needs to be empathetic and customer-driven. And I think that's where organisations don't quite get it right on the logic step, but also then the alignment required from all the way from a board through to the front end of a business in and around how you support and align to the customer outcomes. So I think that, you know, from a technology space, and I sort of broaden that out to a digital space, I think it's a huge enabler and really exciting frontiers. You know, certainly we're testing and learning in all sorts of areas. We've got very exciting things in AI that we're doing and getting terrific results out from that. And again, you know, the functionality is there. You can go and build that, but it's really having the logic in it that it sits in and around the very heart of customer and the empathy required there.
Dan, compared to other pubs and the pub scenes around the world, where does Australia sit in the sense of community engagement and offering from what you've seen from the very best to the very worst?
Oh, look, I think having sort of done roadshows right across the world in relation to the pub business, it's always a difficult conversation to have internationally because, you know, you're in England and you're talking about a pub and it's got a sheep down the road in the paddock and
that's right.
You know, it's very small and the value is not very high. And I mentioned earlier that, you know, it's not unusual to have a pub valued somewhere between $80 to $100 million, one pub, and that's just not heard of in an overseas context. So it's a unique business in Australia, and you know, a lot of not only that value is created from a monetary or a dollar value, but the community in Australia really values a pup. And that's kind of the symbiotic relationship between both, you know, the size and scale of these businesses and the meaningfulness of them in an Australian context.
So if I walk into a Queensland pub or I walk into a South Australian pub, am I going to get a lot of difference, do you think?
Well, look, there's always nuances. And I think one of the great things about our pubs is they're representative of their communities. So, you know, perhaps the roof line might be a little the same and there might be some Art Deco design between, Brisbane and Sydney and those sorts of things. The essence of each pub has a little bit of a unique difference. You know, a big part of our business model is we don't badge anything at a sort of corporate level. Mm-hmm. It's all locally driven. Now, in the back end of it, it is all homogenous and driven with the sophistication of our platform. However, at the front end, that platform generates at the front end a very bespoke community experience, which is really important. So I think that's a unique thing for Australia as well, and that we can go to all of those places you mentioned and get vastly unique experiences, which are enhancing.
Are we a customer service focused nation?
There's a curly one, throwing a curly one at me.
Well, you're playing a lead.
I think we have a lot to do in that area. I don't think we're unique, though. I think that, you know, in a global context, there is just fantastic leaps forward being made on understanding that customer psychology, how you draw that into an organisation, put that into the heartbeat of how you design everything from your financial systems through to your cost base to everything, mm-hmm. your governance and how you put that together. So as you become customer-centric, and I think there's lots of leaps we've got to take forward in that. I think the exciting thing when I think of customers is I think about people like the data scientists getting together with the chief marketing officers and these sorts of roles,
yes.
getting together to really carve out new innovations, new ways of thinking about it. But really the whole C-suite, right from the CEO through, need, I think, a heightened understanding of customer and really put that at the core of strategy, put at the core of how they align and organise the firm.
And I understand your business has done very well, but for those who haven't done necessarily well in the pub scene, with COVID and the sort of changes of decision-making across the country, what's the damage been like? How bad is it out there, Dan?
Well, look, I think it's like quite devastating in terms of what it's done to hospitality workers.
Yeah.
The hospitality scene, and this is across the whole spectrum of, you know, five-star hotels through to restaurants, clubs, has been at the front end of the firing line on this one. And, the behaviour of employers, by and large, has been okay. In some realms, not so much. And some operators just have not had the balance sheet to handle this type of event. Certainly for us, I mean, what we've prioritised through this period, and these are commercial decisions in terms of keeping our people stood up and connected.
Yep.
And that's important. We know our customers' number one value is having an enhanced relationship with our staff. So ensuring our staff are connected and ongoing, and when you stand up again, the same faces are back there, and has been hugely important. And so that's where we not only have to put our time and energy, but also our investment dollars and other dollars towards making sure that we're maintaining that and moving that through. So that is, you know, we're probably an anomaly in the space, because there's been a lot of hardship. And I think that, you know, over the coming period, and I certainly saw it in the between the first lockdown and where we are now, where businesses were stood up, and you know, sadly, the service level has, you know, dropped a bit, and the expertise level has dropped a bit, and the glint in the eye from hospitality workers has dropped a bit.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, we've got a big job to do over the coming period to revitalise that space. But I do think it will take quite some time.
You guys are facing, as you say, the full force of COVID, albeit you've done exceptionally well, as you say, in the balance sheet. But as a chief exec in this industry, and I'm a young person building my career and I'm working with you, I'm probably a little bit worried. I'm not sure what's going to come around the corner. And I'm probably really looking up to that chief exec and that leadership team to see how, you know, are they showing the right way. Are you more conscious of that than ever before? Or have you changed much in any form in that regard?
Certainly. For example, right now we have our stood up portion of our workforce. Their performance measure is a high level of connection with our stood down workforce.
So what do you mean? So how does that work? How does that work, Dan?
So we'll pulse survey the stood down workforce every week, see how they're feeling, see whether they're feeling connected or not.
Okay.
And have that as a score, as well as the qualitative commentary, enabling the stood up workforce to innovate, put together initiatives to keep those people connected and whatnot. It's things like ensuring that with government benefits for that portion of the workforce, that if they come back on and they're with us for a period of time after stand up, we'll true them up to the differential. It's those type of decisions that you make that sit right in our values, it sits right in our value chain. You know, that makes sense for not just those staff members, it makes sense for customers because they want those friendly faces back.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense for shareholders on for the long term because that all adds to the growth story for total shareholder return.
And have the shareholders been receptive? Are they being harsh? Are they understanding? How have you found that interaction?
Hugely supportive.
Yeah.
I think hugely supportive there. We have all four major banks as well. And, you know, I deal with them very regularly. They've all been very supportive. We believe in a high level of transparency in terms of our numbers, keeping them contemporary with the banks. So, again, go back to our purpose, build an environment of trust. That goes to our banks, it goes to our shareholders, as well as our customers and our staff. And the support has been terrific. It is built, though, on a solid balance sheet. It's built on solid fundamentals and a long-term strategy so that whilst these things come and go, and certainly we believed by virtue of keeping ourselves highly liquid outside of the first shutdown that was probably something like this was probably going to happen again. So it was being prepared for that type of event as well, which is unfortunate, but we feel with that we can go to all of our stakeholders and with a very calm mind say we've got the resources required to see this through.
How are you on a personal level, Dan, keeping yourself, I guess, fresh, energised and on the ball?
Well, look, at a personal level, I always have a motto of do something in a day. So I always keep myself physically moving in a day, doing some sort of activity. I don't have any preferred activity, but I do lots of different things. And ensuring that I'm putting great nutrition down the neck so that all the things that are going into the body are helping me and enhancing clear thinking.
Yep.
And, of course, good family and love around time out for that, making sure the time's there for that. Also from a time perspective is understanding that if you want to have clear strategies and clear thinking, you need to squirrel away the time to do it. So in a week, you know, having time to be able to think deeply, reflect, write and learn is a key part of making sure the there's a calmness to even in times like now.
Okay, so we're in uncharted territory and you've got to make obviously some pretty big calls. So as you say, you take the time or you put aside the time to think. When you come to those big decisions, do you bounce them around with anyone or is it you make the call, Dan. How do you operate?
It's highly collaborative. I will talk and canvas ideas. I like to have lots of challenge on my thinking. So ensuring there's people around that are able to challenge and push my thinking. But it all then comes back to values, though. And I find on those really tough decisions, after canvassing lots of challenge and different thinking, different perspectives, bringing it back to the values and the purpose seems to deliver the right decision. But sometimes those decisions are not easy to make or easily executed, I should say. But that's kind of, and there's been a few examples of that of recent times, and it does ring true that when you know your values, you stick to them, you stick to your purpose, that the right decisions will come out.
Mental wellness. You must be seeing how your team are going and also your public during the gaps. What is your observations? And are we, as a leader, are we well prepared? A long way to go? Or has it been a steep learning curve? What's your impression?
Oh, I think that there's been some really there's some differences this time around. And I live in Sydney, but there's people in Melbourne. I've just had enormous empathy for people in Melbourne over this period. It's been really, really hard. And I think there's been damage done. And I think we need to make sure that we're reaching out to each other, be very kind and generous to each other, inquire how people are going, and then try and help people through. I think from our business standpoint, it's making sure that we're not ignoring the negative emotions. We're recognising them, but finding ways to turn them into positive, constructive outcomes and then celebrating those outcomes. And I think that's really practically how we get on the front foot of this in a business context, so as to then hopefully drive real energy in a personal standpoint.
I'll ask you a tricky one, Dan, and as a business, you are right in the cold face of what's happening out there. Do you think business itself has been engaged well enough by politicians or decision makers, or do you think business should maybe put themselves in a position a little bit more to be part of more of the discussion? It's hitting everybody, as you say, but I mean, welcome your thoughts.
Look, I was very supportive, and I thought the government, the New South Wales government, federal government, the first time around did a fantastic job.
Yep.
I thought that there was a lot of collaboration with business. Now, it's different, obviously. There's some Victorian examples there. I know that there's some, you know, there's probably a differing view on some of the decisions made in that state from business. But one of the things that I would say this time around has been government's listening. So, you know, they are listening, but it's all, I think, caught people a bit on the hop this time around. And certainly I'm noticing not the same level of collaboration between state and federal that there was first time around. And I think that along with, greater involvement from business would have I think we run the risk right now, but I think we're running the risk of not having a collaborative approach with both levels of government and business to navigate this through. And I do have some concerns about how people's optimism and sense of how to grow flourishes out of this.
Yeah.
Obviously, this time around we have a vaccine, so yeah. that's providing optimism that there'll be an end in sight. However, you know, it's where we're sitting here today, it's a little way away.
What do you want to achieve in the next 12 months then, Dan?
Well, we've got, I guess, we learned lessons out of the first lockdown and we made some bold moves. So things like really investing very hard in our digital space in the first lockdown, and that really paid off tremendously, over the F21 year.
Yeah.
We've got the ability to do the same sort of thing in new directions, probably more exciting directions. We've got a lot of proof points of our success. So we're able to do more in that area. So excited about that. It's very much in the thread of how we build out our AI tools in particular.
Okay.
Across a broader spectrum of our both our cost base and also on our revenue side. And we've had success in that regard. And this is about, again, this is, sits in the long-term strategy. It's just that, you know, in the context of the moment, you look at that and say, well, we got, that's a high-value thing we can do now. So let's, you know, prioritise our resources in that way. So that's exciting because that will, you know, build out further customer advocacy, further customer penetration. It'll also help with efficiencies. And that accompanied with, as I said before, being prepared on the balance sheet that this may come about again,
yeah,
puts us in good stead to be continuing to do capital works and all the things that we would do normally, but we can do you know, a bit more firmly through a pub shutdown. So we've got things like that that we can add to, and just I think the way in which we have being able to treat our workforce in the early stages of the lockdown, which was, you know, it was a week-to-week proposition. We kept all of our people stood up, even casuals on rosters, just full payroll. And that has just boosted our levels of trust and advocacy with our staff that I think we're going to have a highly sticky, engaged workforce on the reopen, which I think in contrast to unfortunately some other hospitality providers probably won't have. So I think that will allow us to connect with community very quickly,
mm-hmm,
and really go to that sustainable growth model again, perhaps in a slightly accelerated manner.
So what's success going to look like for Dan Brady in a couple of years' time or 5 years' time? Is that still going to be, is there going to be an enormous growth, a lot more pubs? What does it really look like, Dan?
Well, look, the platform today has aspirations to grow. We have aspirations to grow much larger. And it's really, I guess, probably twofold. It's the growing of a business, growing of opportunity for people within the business, and doing it in a way that becomes very enhancing to the communities that we operate in. And our vision is to enrich local communities. It's just really that simple. And it means that you can be going to any manner of community with any manner of asset and sort of say to yourself, well, how am I going to add something here?
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, you've always got to go in with hope and aspiration. Otherwise, you're turning up to people, because these are people businesses, and saying, hey, no, keep doing what you're doing. We think you're great. You keep doing it. And that just doesn't inspire anyone. Right, you've got to go in and say, hey, let's have a conversation, let's work out what we really want together and build a bigger, brighter future. And that's really, you know, going into different communities, what we do.
Well, what's been the biggest learning for you during your career in this industry? Have you got it wrong? And gee whiz, that was something I'm going to keep on back of my mind forever.
Oh, look, I think the biggest learning for me is that, go back to the pub test, the public bar, having that conversation in the public bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's a people business. It's a business that's about enhancing people's lives. And as sophisticated as all this has gotten over the years with all the different corporate structures, the different investors, all of the highly technical situations one gets into, there has only been one thing that's been the most important thing, which is you keep the hotels performing. And the only way the hotels have performed is to truly understand your customer. And the only way you truly understand your customer is to have that type of understanding of humans. And that's really what still fascinates me today, actually, Rick. I learned a lot back then and I'm still learning today, and we're complex beings, and this is actually what, you know, drives all the value in our business. So it's it's still a fascinating journey.
Dan, I'd be doing the wrong thing by all our audience and all those Australians out there if I didn't ask you this question. What's the secret, Dan, to pulling the perfect beer?
Well, there is lots of theories on that. I have one. It's a nice clean glass. Keep your hand at the bottom. Don't touch the glass on the tap. It's a two pull. Now, lots of people say one pull, but it's two pull. And have a healthy amount of frothing head on the top that can present like a mouth-watering ale that we all like to down now and then on a hot day.
Dan, if you were to look back at that young man building his career in Tamworth and where he is now, what advice would you give him?
Well, I would say to that, and I think I was guilty of this at times, of not doing this. Thankfully, not where I am today, but I wish I could go back there and just say, think big. Think big. Along for that would be inherent, be a continuous learner and understand who you are and drive at your values. And that would be the thing that if I could get one message through to my younger self, it would be that, think big.
On that, Dan, thank you very much for making the time to join us today.
Terrific. Thanks, Greg.
You've been listening to No Limitations.